This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Aftershock Central podcast for Infinity War discussion. You've come to the right place. No? Not Infinity War discussion?
No.
Where's my Rough Riders TV show, bro? Come on. Let's get on that.
I just saw that Adam Glass tweeted out that he's pitching for the Normals TV show.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That would work pretty well.
Yeah.
Is that going to take the spot of Supernatural that's been going on for 35 years?
At least not next year, because it just got renewed, so...
That's what I'm saying! What's that, 14 seasons?
Yeah.
If they want to do a Normals TV show, they'd probably do another series of the comic, right?
Well, I mean, they have to.
I think that's not a bad idea.
I wouldn't complain about it.
Let's just hope that Adam doesn't abandon us with his new DC gig.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, good. I'll be okay with that. Awesome. So, there was a book, and we talked about it. 5 out of 5. All right, that's a podcast.
There was 2 books.
If
you're counting,
technically,
shock.
Yeah, technically. Well, we're going to be discussing 2 books. One already came out. Mm-hmm. We're just late to the party.
Not really, because there's a lot to unravel.
That's true. It's pretty thick. It's what, like 160 pages?
Sure.
That sounds pretty good. I mean, I could just open it and see how many pages are in here.
Well, the last story starts on 152, so...
Okay, there you go. All right, so do you guys want to tackle Shock first or Baby Teeth?
Let's do Baby Teeth, and then we can deep dive into Shock.
I like it. Travis, do you have a nutshell for us?
Yes, I do. So, Clark opens a portal to the Red Realm with his cries, and he and Heather are pulled through it. The coyote frees Sadie and the captain and sends them off to a secure location in Palestine before exploding the settlement with a suicide vest. After arriving in Palestine, they discover that they are living with another chosen child and his mother, who offers to help them try and find Heather and Clark.
Yeah. It's a good nutshell.
Yep.
What did you guys think of this wrap-up of the first year?
It was amazing, just like 1 through 9.
Now, is this going to be on hiatus for a couple months before we get the next one? I didn't look at the release schedule.
I think so.
Yeah, makes sense.
But creator roll call.
I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Travis, you need to be on the ball, bro.
Yeah, I don't do creator roll call, man.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's me. Sorry, I was so excited to talk about this book. Donnie Cates writing, Gary Brown on art, Mark Englert on colors, and Taylor Esposito on letters.
Whoa. That's like a singing of the name, or
hey, don't you know that song? Come on,
I know
everybody sings that song.
Not everybody, but
I wonder. Okay. I bet Taylor's heard that once or twice before.
Probably. Okay, back to it.
Yes, I'm drinking some hibiscus tea. By the way, it's delicious.
You're such a hipster. Last week it was like Long Island iced tea or something, and then it was breakfast tea, and then...
Yeah, breakfast tea's the best, dude.
Is there a difference between breakfast tea and just tea?
Oh, there is a difference. There's a consistency difference. There's a texture, and there's a texture difference and a taste difference.
Okay. I don't know if I want texture in my tea.
I put coconut milk, or not coconut milk, coconut oil in my tea.
Yep, see? Hipster. I put sugar, and that's it.
Well, good for you.
All right, back to the book.
Yes.
So, your question was, how do we think this wrapped up for the first year, right?
Sure.
I think we first started with issue 1, and she's talking to the phone, and on the last page, we get why she's in the ruins, because she's, like, in Palestine. And talking on the phone, so we know how she got there and how she got the phone. But it leaves more questions than the answers, really.
Really? I thought it wrapped up quite a few things.
No, it did. But I'm just saying, like, it wrapped up the first year fine, but like it left a taste in our mouth for wanting more. For later.
Yeah, what I liked is that it seems like the next quote unquote volume of this thing is going to be taking place maybe in this Redlands.
Yeah.
Because she's going to have to go and find the baby in the Hell Dimension.
Mm-hmm.
And that excites me because, well, I guess we're not going to see that baby, but we might see other children who were chosen in this other realm. And I wonder, like, what kind of forces she's going to run into.
Right. And time doesn't work the same.
Yeah, yeah. Time's really weird over there. Because we get to see the girl that we saw. What issue was that? It was pretty early on, right? Yep. That wasn't in the first one.
It was in the second issue.
Yeah. Yeah. The girl that was running from the cult and got sucked into the red portal. We get to see her, except now she's, I mean, I would say at least in her 50s.
Yeah.
And her kid's like 3.
Yep.
Even though it's been 14 years. So that's a little odd. Do you think the aging happens in the Redlands, or is it just like even after she gets back, she still ages quicker?
No, clearly I would think it's just like more time has passed when she's in the Red Realm, you know, that the time is dilated there. But I think it does question, like, is this really like a child for all intents and purposes, you know, like they kind of speak to it like it's a child, you know? And I think that's kind of the interesting thing about the whole story is like, what is up with these whatever children, you know, like are they innocent or whatever? Like, I mean, this thing has been in the Red Realm for God knows how long, but Clark, you know, like, is it right for these people to want to save them in the way that they are, to protect them, you know?
You're talking about the cult.
I'm talking about like the coyote too, you know, like he's you know, different reasoning, but like same, like result is like they're trying to keep the kid safe, you know, like, and kind of like more to that, actually, I'm kind of curious what all are the like the factions in this story, you know, like the Way and all of them, are they connected to the Red Realm or, you know, like in maybe in a tangential fashion, you know, like they reference like a kind of ritual that nobody has survived that, like, I don't know.
The bigger question for me is when they come back, when the kids come back, or the kid and the parent, is the kid, quote,
for sure,
quote unquote, cured or not demonic or whatever anymore?
Hmm.
Because we don't see him acting out, and obviously we know it takes a toll on his mom, you know, as she's tired and cranky as well as older. And
see, to me, I don't know if that made a difference. I think it's just a matter of the kid growing up, right?
Okay.
So if he's, I don't know how long they spent, let's just say 10 years.
Okay.
I mean, that seems to be like an okay number, because she would have been in her teens. And she's much older now, so about 40 years past. The kid looks like he's about 4. So 10 years over here is 1 year over there.
Okay.
Although, like, the way that that the kid would actually grow is probably relevant if he's immortal, right? Because at some point, he would kind of just quit aging.
Right.
So maybe once they get to a certain age, then they just kind of stop there and keep going. Now, as to your question, it seems like, because of the fact that he's a little bit older, he doesn't throw temper tantrums like a baby would. And that's why Clark is the way he is. And this other kid, we don't see him lashing out with his demonic powers. He could still have them.
Right. And there's a story there, too. Like, for Simon, did he lose his arm in the Red Room? Because he doesn't have a left arm.
Oh, right.
Or was he, you know, was that part of the birth defect type thing, and maybe Clark has one that we haven't seen yet?
Hmm.
So, or did, you know, something happen in the Red Realm to, for us, or for him to lose it?
Or maybe it's like a ritual gone wrong or something, you know, like yeah, it didn't work out.
Yeah.
So he's a reject.
Right.
I mean, I would think with all the demons in the Red Realm that maybe he lost his arm escaping from something there. You know what I'm saying? I'm not sure if that has anything to do with the
No, it doesn't.
They're ritual in any way.
Well, it doesn't have anything to do with the main story, I would doubt. But it's just something curious that could be explored later on.
I would like to see the story of Simon and his mom in the Red Realm. Because I'm sure we're going to have a whole journey, right, with our characters in the next volume.
Right.
But I would like to see, like, some kind of mirroring between the two stories, right? Because since Simon and his mom have already been through this whole thing, like, how is that different with Clark and his mom?
Right. Is it going to be different, or is it going to be second verse, same as the first?
Well, dude, now it's with Heather, right? Like, so she could be interesting in a context like that, you know?
Yeah, true.
Like, she's kind of a badass.
Yeah, she's a badass, but plus she's not even his mom. So how would you react different than like a mother or father would in that scenario?
I would love to see Heather come back as like one of those badass characters in like medieval sword and sorcery stories, you know?
Yeah.
Like the protector.
Yeah.
I think that'd be pretty badass to see.
With a huge like 12-foot sword.
Yeah. Like what's the princess from Bone? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
The old lady
yeah.
that used to be a princess?
Yeah. Exactly like that.
Yeah. I would dig that. Matter of fact, I would dig it if the next volume had a lot more of just that, just Heather and the baby.
Yeah. Which could be. We could see a whole arc of just Heather and the baby, and then the next arc of Sadie and the captain trying to get there.
Well, so do you think the captain would go?
I don't think
so. I almost feel like Sadie wouldn't let him go.
Yeah, but the way Captain has been, like character-driven-wise, I don't think he would say no, because both of his daughters are over there now. And so he wouldn't have anything to live for on this side. If everything that he lives for is on the Red Realm.
Right, right. All right, so what about, let's talk about Chris, and what's the other cult guy, the demon-looking guy?
Dancy.
So, did Chris not know that he was, I mean, I always assumed he wasn't human, but did Chris not know that? Because when she's trying to get to Clark and Heather in that room, he's like, I got this, I'll open the door. And, like, starts banging on it. She's like, what the hell are you?
No, I mean, she references that he's unholy, that he's, like, a crime against nature or something,
yeah,
you know?
Abomination.
Like, I think she says that. Yeah, so I think she shouldn't be that surprised, but knowing something and then seeing it firsthand might be, like, different, maybe. Like, she's horrified to see it.
Yeah but surely he's done something over the years that they've been together. Where it would show his other side, right? I mean, maybe not. You know, if they've been looking for this baby the whole time or waiting for the baby, then maybe not.
Well, maybe that's a subconscious point for Dancy's character, though, as to where he hides his normal self because of the guilt of being an abomination. And he doesn't want her to look at him like that, you know, so trying to, like, win her loyalty back or whatever.
Right.
And then here, he's just like, I don't give a shit. I'm going all out.
Yeah, I guess that's possible.
Yeah. I mean, they're dead now anyway, so.
Well, we assume they are.
We don't see no bodies.
Yeah. Dude, this is comics.
Yeah, there was a big explosion. I don't, you know. I guess you're right.
I mean, I've been watching TV for 30-plus years now. And reading comics for 30 plus years now, unless I see a body, I'm not assuming anybody's dead.
Mm-hmm. Well, and in comics, even if you do see a body, sometimes it doesn't matter.
That is true. Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
You never know nowadays. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I wanted to discuss about this one. I'm not sure that. I mean, I thought this was a pretty straightforward issue. It was extremely gratifying because a lot of stuff did get wrapped up, and of course, it did set things up for the next volume. Whenever that may be coming back. So
yep.
You guys just want to wrap this one up and go to Shock?
Sure.
All right. I'm going to give this a 5 out of 5. Yeah. I don't have anything else. That's it.
This is getting a 5 out of 5. Purple Raccoon through the red hole, Tamos.
Ah, he's the best, dude.
Yes, he is.
I want more of that guy. This should have like a whole issue of just the raccoon.
Yep.
Yeah, do you notice that he walked in like at the same time as Coyote? Like almost like they were like kind of like working together on the mission. Like where you're just like, okay, like I think we're going the same way on this one. Hmm. I thought that was cool. I'll go 5 out of 5 as well. Don't F with Coyote Tamos.
Nice.
Cause I don't, dude, like he went out like a boss in this, man. Like he definitely like shook up a lot of stuff in this story.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Let's move on to Shock. We're not going to do a creator roll call or a nutshell because there's 3,000 stories in here. But I do want to say a brief word about anthologies, because anthologies are my favorite thing ever. So I'm so glad that Joe decided to do this. And I know that he explained quite a bit about the history of how this came about and his history with anthologies in that first page. Right? There's like a letter from the publisher at the beginning.
Right.
And it was really nice to see. You know, because I know Ronnie and I have talked about this quite a bit, but nobody ever wants to try to do this kind of book, because I guess most publishers feel like it's not going to sell. And I don't know what the sales numbers are going to be for this particular book, but I've been itching for an anthology for a long time, and few people really care to do it, I guess. So props to Joe and Aftershock for taking the chance to do this kind of thing.
Well, dude, Martin, let me ask you this, right? Like you're a fan of anthologies. Do you keep up at all with like heavy metal or 2000 AD?
Yeah, but there's a difference in that those are not American comics.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about heavy metal. That might be American in some respect, but yeah, I mean, like I would certainly say though that like there's no argument to be made about the difference in quality between those, you know, because there's a difference, I guess, between doing like a weekly or monthly like publication, anthology publication, and then doing like a prestige anthology like Aftershock is done. And it's like, you know, it's night and day, you know, like I really have like a lot of love for 2000 AD and heavy metal, but like those things are not always like gold, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, I see your point, but you can really say that about anything. Like, not every comic that comes out every week is gold either, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, heavy metal, I actually have a subscription, and, like, I've fallen off reading it, but it was, like, it's gotten pretty bad, like, even compared to, like, you know, where it's been over the years and decades and stuff, you know?
Yep.
Like, it's not like Saturday Night Live where you're like, oh, it's really bad, you know? It's like, oh, no, this is, like, this bad. but this is, it's like, so great, like, from top to bottom, you know? Like, it's super quality. So, like, I'm definitely down for more of it.
Yeah, hopefully they do another volume of it sometime.
Yeah, I would like that. And I think they pretty much everybody that has worked in Aftershock so far is in this, with a few exceptions. So that was nice to see. I would love, I mean, I don't expect something like this to be out, you know, monthly or even quarterly, but I'd be perfectly happy with like a once a year thing.
Oh yeah.
You know, in this exact format, because it's an oversized hardcover.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I read a lot of digital books. This is not something that I would want digitally.
Right. And just like, I think there was 200 copies of the, or maybe just 100 copies of the C2E2 exclusive cover
one. Oh, nice.
But like by Sunday, there was probably only 10 to 20 left. So so they were going off the table all weekend. So
no, that's good.
So it's not just us three that want this. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and, you know, the thing is, I understand it's not a big market, but you don't need to have a big market to have a successful book either. You know, if you have a core group of people you know are going to buy this particular book every time it comes out, then you just plan for that, right, in your financials, and it'll still be worthwhile to do. It's like when people do Kickstarters.
Yeah, plus, like, yes. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Oh, it's like just the quality of like the really like prestige people they got on the book. Like you can't screw with that, dude. Like Jim Starlin and like Neil Gaiman. Like they don't like just do anything, you know. Like you stack all of those with the other people that like had stories in this book. Like it's very attractive to like curious buyers, I would say.
Yeah.
And I think if they do it once a year as like the other big companies do crossover events or big events, because we're not a shared universe here, so we can have one once a year.
Yeah, I think it's good. You know, it allows creators to just kind of tell something short and sweet. You know, maybe one of these writers has one of these ideas in the back of their head that they want to actually turn into a full-fledged book.
Right.
And they just kind of want to get something out so people can see it. I'm trying to think of which one. Like, Devolution, for example. I think that would be an interesting one to see a miniseries or an ongoing of. That's the Aaron Douglas book, the story towards the end.
Yep.
Because it pretty much tells the whole history of the story, and it's pretty obvious that Aaron's mapped out this whole story. But then again, it has to be told in 4 or 5 pages.
Right.
And the premise was really interesting, so I would love to see that come out, you know? And maybe this is a testing ground for some of those stories. And I would also love to see them do testing ground for maybe new people to come in.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, Zach and Lonnie, for example, they're starting to become established because they've got a few books out. But, you know, a year and a half ago, they were nobody, right?
Right.
And with Aftershock being so creator-focused, I know that for a long time the focus was to have big names come in and write the books. But now as the market progresses and the stories progress, I would like for Aftershock to have some kind of corner where they allow newer people to come in and try something, you know, like Black Mass does or Vault Comics does.
Right.
Because to me, that's what's important. Like, I don't want to just read the same stuff over and over from the same people. You know, as much as I love Donny Cates, like, he's doing 6 books right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, like, I still love Donny. I know, Ronnie, you're having an issue with Thanos, which it's fine because it's over. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, you want to have fresh blood coming in all the time. And this is a good test market for that. You know, when Joe was doing Negative Burn in, the 80s and 90s, like, there's a crap ton of people that have come out of that.
That right? That are big names now.
That are big names. Like, Bendis came out of Negative Burn.
Yeah.
So
I heard that he's doing something big over at DC.
Never heard of him. I heard he was coming somewhere, but I know he's not coming here.
No.
So they might be lying to me. They told me he was coming.
Yeah.
That's all I know.
Every comic, every ad.
Yeah, it was like a 2-page spread every issue. I'm like, come on, guys.
Yeah.
You think you don't think people know this already? I'm pretty sure everyone's heard of this by now.
But that backs your point up, though. Like, back then, he was just a young writer coming out, and now one of the big twos, like, pushing him hardcore.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Right?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Well, I mean, Marvel was doing the same thing with him 10 years ago. You know?
Correct. I'm just saying, like, he's a big name. He's a household name now.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. So that's what I was
going to say. Well, anthologies have long been, like proving grounds for new creators. You know, like, we've seen that, you know, 2000 AD documentary. Like,
oh, yeah,
pretty eye-opening. So, like just being able to put out something like a regular story, and like to have complete creative freedom, you know, like is a great launching pad for creators.
Ronnie, did you see that?
Yeah, I did.
God, that is a good documentary, dude.
Yeah. And it also gives the artist a chance to go to the other side and write as well. Cause one of my favorite stories in here is by Francesca Francavilla.
I just wanted to hear you say it.
Yeah. I nailed it, by the way.
Pretty cool.
But because usually he's just doing the art.
Right.
And so, you know, here, and that's like one of my favorite stories in it, just because it seems like it's high and intense and going somewhere, and then, you know, it ends up just being the Scarecrow.
Yeah, I think the other one that's usually an artist was Michael Gatos. He did Dead City in here.
Yep.
He usually only does art, so that was nice to see him do something else as well. All right, so let's I don't know how you guys want to tackle it. Do you want to just like go story by story? Do you want to just talk about a couple? Like each one of us pick a couple?
I'd say just each one of us pick a couple.
All right, so Ronnie, since you already talked about Invasion,
yeah,
what'd you like about Invasion?
Well, the art's phenomenal, for one.
Duh.
Yeah, that's like a no-brainer. But then I liked how it set up how the aliens were coming here, or coming and probing and just doing research and research and research, and then they gave up on Earth because they didn't find any compatible or intelligent life here, but the person that they kept doing was a scarecrow in a cornfield.
Yes. It's not that there was an intelligent life. I think it's because they try to use their mental abilities to mind control the scarecrow. And of course, he's a scarecrow, not a person, and so that's why it didn't work. Yeah, I really like this one as well. It reminded me one of the stories in Action 1000 was a lot like this. The Brainiac story. You know what I'm talking about, Ronnie?
Yep, I know.
Where he mind controls that professor, and then like not anybody can be mind controlled. So he's like, "Well, screw this, I'm out of here."
Right. Yep.
That was a lot like this one. So yeah, I really like this one. It was an interesting one. Travis, any thoughts on Invasion?
I'm on board. Like I thought that was a really cool like twist, and obviously like it's a clever story to tell in a very short format, you know? Like I thought that was like a really nice one.
Well, Travis, tell me one of your favorites out of this whole thing.
Okay. One of the ones I think that like maybe bears like the most discussion, like made one of the biggest impacts, is Berserker.
Okay.
Do you remember that one?
I do, the Jim Starlin one.
Yep.
Yeah, Starlin and like Phil Hester.
Yep, Phil Hester.
You know, like you know, kind of opens up with like this really like trippy kind of depiction of like whatever. It's, you know, it's like abstract, universal, like something out of like Marvel Cosmic. And, you know, you don't really know what's, like, going on. He's just talking about, like, how connected to the universe he is, and, like, slowly start to unfold, like, images where he's talking about, like, the sacrifice he needs to make, and like you discover he's been, like, shooting up a movie theater. Mm-hmm. I don't know, obviously it's very provocative subject matter. It's visceral, like we all have a response to it, and like I think it, like I don't know. It seems to me it would be like an exploration into madness, you know, like this is one like lunatic's like motivation in a scenario like this, and like the outcome is that like they now think that like they're this like universal boogeyman.
See, I didn't get that at all.
No.
No, in fact, this was definitely not in my top. This one was closer to the bottom for me, actually.
Whoa.
Yeah. I think I understand where you're coming from, Travis, and I'm not disagreeing with you, but I think the problem for me was that 3 pages was not enough to tell the story. It was a little difficult to make the connection from the start of the story to the end. I know they show the panels where they interweave like this universal cosmic entity with this guy like running around, but it didn't quite hit for me, right? Because I got to the last page, and normally I'm a very careful reader, and I see these kind of things coming. And I got to the last page, and I'm like, okay, well, how do we get here? Like, I didn't get that from the stuff that I read. And the stuff that this guy was saying as we're going through the panels, all the inner monologue, it didn't quite jive for me as to how this was motivation for what happens in the last page.
Okay. I can see that.
So now, if this had been, like, I don't know, even a couple pages longer, then maybe there would have been enough detail in there for me to be like, okay, yeah, like this is the build up, and here's the denouement, right? So now we see the guy, he shut up this movie theater. But for me, there wasn't any of that. It's like we got the beginning of the story. Like,
I'm looking at it now, right? So second page, like there's a panel of him like walking towards the screen. Third page, he's got like tears in his eyes, and there's like panels of like shells on the ground and bodies on the ground, and then like the third page is a full page splash. So from like a quarter of the way through, they kind of like are teasing like the real world story.
No, I understand what the panels are telling me. I'm talking about what is being said. I understand what you're saying, but to me, it didn't follow from one thing to the next, right? Like, yeah, and I read that this is the one that I read the most times out of any in this book because I wanted to make sure that I hadn't missed anything. And usually I feel very confident after a first read that I got everything. By like the third read, if there's something I missed, I would be highly surprised. And I read this four times, and I still didn't get how we got from beginning to end. Now, I like I said, I get what you're saying, and what you're saying makes total sense to me based on what I'm seeing on the page. But for me personally, I didn't follow the storytelling the way it was told.
So the panels didn't match up to what was being said, the narration, basically, for you.
For me, right.
Yeah, that's cool.
But I mean that's why we read comics, though, right? Like, it's not just about what the panels say or just about what the art is. It's a mixture of both things, right?
Right.
So that I get, and that's why what Travis is saying makes sense to me. And the way he explained it to me makes this a good story. But for me personally, I didn't get that feeling. I was just like, okay. Like, you know, when we get to the last page and he shot up all these people and there's blood everywhere and heads blown up, like, I expected some kind of reaction when I see that kind of thing on a page. And I had no reaction. I was like, wait, what? Why? So I get that it's like a descent into madness story. It just, for me, it didn't work as well.
That's cool. What one did work for you then?
One that I really liked was The Mountain Pass. This is Bill Willingham, Travis Moore, Hoyt Silva, and Marshall Dillon. And that's a story of the guy who's traveling through the mountains, and he comes upon this cabin in the middle of nowhere. And there's just a lonely woman in there, and she brings him in, and they start chatting. And it turns out that she's one of his people's goddesses. She's one of the goddesses of vengeance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he seems like a really upstanding guy or whatever, and they're talking. And she's like, I just kind of wanted to get away from the world. And, you know, that's why I came here. And the guy's like, when he realizes who she is, he's like, oh, man, like, that's so – not in those ways, in those words, but he's like, that's so awesome that, like – you're the vengeance goddess, you know, like I can't stand. She sees the people that she's the goddess of vengeance, but she punishes people that break oaths.
Witness.
Yeah. False witness. People that break oaths. And so he's like, oh, he's like, I hate a liar. Like, there's nothing that I hate more or whatever. And she's like, well, like, I'm kind of tired of it. If you want to do it, then like, we'll trade, you know, I'll go hang out and do nothing.
Yeah.
And you can be the god of vengeance. And he's like, hell yeah, I am in. And we get this awesome ass page with her transferring her powers to him. And then the last page is the repercussions. And that's something I noticed about all these stories, by the way. They're all very, very Black Mirror, where you get the story, you get some kind of resolution. And then at the end, you learn the repercussions of what happened. And so as it turns out, like, yeah, he's got to kill people that are liars, but that also includes kids, right? Because kids lie all the time.
Yep.
And he's like, I don't want to kill kids. She's like, too bad. That's your job now.
Yep. It's your duty.
Yeah. And the reason I like this the most is that I'm a insanely gigantic fan of The Twilight Zone. And this is almost exactly the plot of at least two episodes of The Twilight Zone. not necessarily like, you know, this guy meeting a goddess of his culture or whatever. But like a person meeting some kind of mysterious entity where like they end up trading places, or, you know, the guy gets a wish granted only to learn that that's not really what he wanted. I think this type of story is like a typical almost like fairy tale, right? Because fairy tales always have a moral at the end, right? Like, don't go in the woods because, you know, the witch is going to get you, right? She's going to bring you in her house and give you gingerbread cookies, and then she's going to eat you, right? Like, the moral of the story is, don't go in the damn wood, kids, or something's going to kill you,
yeah,
right? Not that there's a witch there.
Right.
And to me, like, this was just so, like, just so prototypical storytelling that I really enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it too. Like you said, that's what it seemed like. This whole thing, it was like an anthology of moral stories, basically. Mm-hmm. Like, yep. Each short story was something.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah, like with respect to this one, you know, like I feel like the kind of moralistic undertones are like this guy, I guess, almost. He's like too attached to like honor, you know, like, yeah. Like, and also pride with respect to that, you know, like he's like proud and boastful about like how honorable he is. Like, even when he's got like the god whose job it is, and you know, like who he, you know, should be worshiping, like it's like, you know, you don't know like what it really is, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And he's like, no, if I were you, I would do this because, like, I'm so honorable, you know? So I think, like, that's kind of maybe, the moralistic, like, part of the story, you know?
Yep. Totally agree.
All right, I'm going to pick another
one. But she lets him do it, you know? She's like, oh, you know?
Of course she does.
Why don't you just trade places with me? You want to do it so much.
Yeah. It kind of also has the thing of be careful what you wish for type thing too.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, he's loyal and all that, but yet, oh, I'm so bored. And then he jumps at the chance to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
And it's totally not what he was wanting to do.
It's always the way it goes.
Yep.
All right, Ronnie, you're up again.
All right. I'm going to pick this one because I really want a miniseries or whatever on a war piece. So I'm going to go Live or Die by Joe Pruitt, Cliff Richards, Guy Major, and Marshall Dillon.
It's a good one.
Yeah. The art in here is phenomenal. And I know that Travis is going to bring Bloodshot into the mix.
Well, no, I was just going to ask, like, there's red eyes in this one. So is it connected to Black Eyed Kids?
Oh, yeah, that's a good point, too.
Could be.
We're establishing the rainbow eyes.
The rainbow spectrum kids.
Mm-hmm.
No, yeah, I really... this one, like I said, you know, I'm into the wartime peace comics, I guess,
sure.
Here lately. And this one, you know, the guy had pretty much no chance of getting out of the slaughter. And he made the deal. And that's a classic tale in itself, is just making the deal, like, all the way back to, like, the Crossroads, and even further back than that.
Yep.
So.
I'm with you. I enjoyed this one. I did get it's funny, too. I thought the same thing, especially in that last page.
Yeah.
I was like, Travis is going to bring up Bloodshot. I know it. But, I thought overall it was good. There were definitely tones of Black Eyed Kids. I do enjoy a good and different wartime story. Wartime stuff is not my favorite thing, but I think this was different enough where I would love to see more of this kind of thing. In some respects, it gave me that, like, I don't know, almost like an Apocalypse Now type of feel.
Yeah.
Which I like. It's a good, great movie. So, yeah, I also dug this one. In some respects, I think this one is somewhat similar to The Mountain Pass too, right? I mean, I think the moral is almost not quite the same, but similar, right? Because the guy pretty much just made a deal with the devil.
Yep.
And maybe that's not necessarily the best thing.
Because there's always a trick involved.
Yep.
You got anything to say about this one, Travis?
I think you guys, you know, pretty much covered it. I, among other things, thought it was cool that, like, whatever it is, like, shifts his appearance to look like you, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
like maybe that's kind of a mechanism to like engender trust, and you're like, oh no, it's cool, I'm not scary, I'm you, you know, so it'll be that much easier for me to like take you over I guess I'm just interested, like in kind of the extent of like how, you know, is there trickery involved with this? You know, like are these scenarios as they're presented where it's like, oh no, you will for sure die because I could tell the future, but I can also change the future, you know?
Yeah.
Like you, it's not necessarily like super trustworthy, but I guess, you know, desperate situations, you got to make a choice.
So agreed.
I also agree about the art. Like, it's that's pretty awesome. So I liked it a lot.
Cool. Who wants to go next? Should I go next or Travis, you want to go next?
You can go next.
All right. So my next one in sticking with the fairy tale stories is going to be Little Red Hood.
Oh,
this
yeah.
This is Frank Thierry, nice. Joe Eisma, and Tony Fajazula, and Marshall Dillon.
Shocker.
Wait, Marshall Dillon works for Aftershock?
Marshall Dillon lettered this whole book almost?
Yeah, I think he did, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So even though the title is Little Red Hood, I didn't get the allegory until, well, like, I don't know, the second page, maybe the third page. When the mob boss pops in, because once she starts discussing with the mob boss what happened to his stash of drugs, the whole story pretty much turns out to be the exact plot of Little Red Riding Hood, and it was freaking hilarious. Which of course Frank Thierry is hilarious in a very twisted kind of way, and I think this is like Frank to a T in the story. So the girl turns out she's a runner, a drug runner for this, for grandma, who is a dealer for what's the boss's name? Papa Oko. And that plays into the end of the story. And so she tells him the story of why she doesn't have his money. And as it turns out, she goes to this house where grandma is, where grandma lives, and there's blood everywhere. And this guy called the Wolf pops out and attacks her. And the lumberjack guy from across the hall comes in and kills the wolf, and that's how she is able to escape. But the cops have the drugs, so she doesn't have the drugs. And the mob boss is like, well, I need my money. And she's like, listen, if you don't shut your damn mouth, I'm going to cut your balls off and turn you from Papa Goose to Mother Goose, which is also like a nice touch there, right? And then as the story ends, we learn that the lumberjack guy is like her boyfriend, and they paid this wolf guy to kill grandma, and then they killed Wolf so that their story couldn't be like, you know, whatever. So I thought it was an awesome way to retell a classic children's story in an adult setting. And this was one of the longer ones, I think, in the story, in this book. But the amount of pages that it was given was more than enough to tell the complete story. Mm-hmm. And so for me, that's what makes it one of the more solid ones here. Because it was just so inventive and creative and funny, but like violent at the same time and very witty. So, and the art was great. The art was great.
Yep.
I'm kind of hit or miss on Joe Eisma, but for this, at least in particular, I really dug it. It seemed like it was less clean than what he usually does.
Yeah, that's true. And I figured.
Yeah, Martin, I think to your point. Sorry.
Go ahead.
So, to your point, you know, like, I think it's easy sometimes to be kind of like jaded about like kind of fairy tale adaptations in comics, you know, but this one was definitely very inventive and like actually brought a lot of original ideas, you know, like the kind of the double cross, like frame tale with like the mob boss, like that's not part of any like Red Riding Hood story that I'm familiar with, you know?
Sure. Right.
So like that I think is maybe an essential part of like, you know, making it a successful telling, you know?
Yep. I agree.
And I figured you would like this one, Martin, because the lumberjack guy is definitely dressed like a hipster. And you are a hipster, so.
Yes, but I bet he doesn't drink hibiscus tea.
You never know.
He might. Now he's got all that drug money. He can buy all the hibiscus he wants.
That's correct.
All right. Travis, you're up.
Okay. I really liked Moments.
Oh,
blanking
one.
On the creative roll call, but like
wait,
kind
which
of
one was
it's Moments.
Oh, okay, Moments.
It's the second to last story.
Yeah, so basically, like, you know, they're working for like maybe a social media platform slash like news aggregator, and it's like, you know, failing, and they get called into a, like secret meeting with like an avatar of their hermit boss, who's like telling about a new feature that will protect the social feed a day from now, and kind of like. In and amongst that, kind of like he sees headlines posted by somebody in the meeting about like his passing, goes off the grid, and then basically like, you know, they put out stories about his death and like lock up a person that they suspect of the murder, and come to find out that the guy is in fact not even real. He's actually a chatbot that was created by same person who's done all of, you know, the stuff with, you know, Moments, the like the future technology. And it's kind of
see,
like,
I didn't get that. I got something else, but
my reading was like, he's like, I made you and, you know, like that was pretty good. But now like, this is my new thing is like, I've created this thing that quote unquote predicts the future, you know, but really it's me. Like making the future,
right?
You know, and what I think is most interesting about it is like that it is a social media thing, and like how that kind of interacts with like our post-truth hashtag fake news like worlds that like for real, like if anybody like, because all it would take is like one, you know, a couple demonstrable predictions in this service that would throw everything off and be like, this doesn't predict the future, it's a sham. But like in a thing where you just believe whatever is on your Moments feed, you know, and like they admit to fabricating it themselves, you know, like maybe people actually might believe that, and you could kind of actually successfully sell that.
So I didn't get that it was a developer of this Moments social media site. For some reason, I thought that it was the website itself that created the chatbot. I thought this was like an AI, where Moments had become sentient and was creating this chatbot to continue the platform and have like a face where people can relate to, but that the AI had figured out a way to control humanity. And that was through this future Moments thing.
Yeah, that's an interesting take. It's like, it's not specific because it's kind of like an open-ended like speech bubble, right?
Oh yeah, sure. We could ask Mike. Mike Zagari wrote the story. He's SVP of brand at Aftershock.
Yep, and digital.
And digital, right.
Which is cool because I think this is like his first, it might not be his like first work, but you know.
Aftershock it is.
Yeah, on this scale. I would say.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. And the art was good, too.
Yep.
That was Will Sliney. We'll go with that.
Okay.
And the colorist was the colorist from Monster Mechanica.
That's correct.
Sean Weirs.
And guess who did letters?
Was it Marshall Dillon?
Correct.
Yeah, I'm glad he...
I was going to say Dave Sharp.
Yeah. No, wrong publisher. I'm glad you picked this one, Travis, because this was it was a contender for one of the stories I wanted to discuss tonight. So I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah.
I really liked it. What about stories that are in here? What would you like to see turn into a full-fledged book?
Well, I thought it was kind of cool because Bill Willingham's in here, but and he's famously done for Fables.
Yep.
But he didn't do Fables or the Red Riding Hood one. So I think something along those lines would be cool. Like,
wait, Willingham did the Mountain Pass.
I know, but he's famous for Fables.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
So I think something like that, or like I've been waiting for a war story type.
Yeah, I'm with you. I would love to see this war story since we, I mean, we've got horror still.
Yeah.
But I think the way that Joe does his stories is a different type of horror. I think it's a lot more classic horror, where it's more suspense and not necessarily gore. You know, where the story stretches out and you become invested in it as a result. I would love to see that. And I know I already mentioned it, but the Aaron Douglas story, Devolution,
yeah,
I think could be really interesting. Because there's many different ways that could go. And it could have some zombie vibes. And you guys know I love zombie stories. Of course, these aren't zombies. But like, there's many different things that are similar in nature, right? So like zombie stories, or like Planet of the Apes. What's the one? Oh, God. The Time Machine. Okay. Jules Verne. So, yeah. Really, really dig it.
I would like to see, of all these, the Neil Gaiman story. Like I'd read a miniseries of that.
Yeah, that was really interesting. It was very Sandman.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really liked it. Like, obviously, like, it's very abstract. And, you know, like it's maybe, you know, it's almost like a visual poem, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But like I'm pretty interested about like some of the like breadcrumbs about what's going on, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Anything else we want to say about Shock?
Even though we didn't mention the stories, most of them are awesome.
Yeah, I think they were all really great. There was even one in here that I didn't quite follow along. The Istanbul one.
Yeah.
There's no words in that story until that last page.
Yep.
It's all told through art. But the art was beautiful.
Yeah.
So even through that, I appreciated it.
It gave off like the Ikrit art, like the Sam Keith style, even though it's not, but the European art style, I guess, rather.
I like that.
Yeah, dude, I also got to like give props for, I'm going to say Kerguelen, like the Andy Clark story.
Mm-hmm.
The art is pretty
it's
crazy and amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, also, how gruesome is that, dude? Like that's your horror like component right there, you know? Like got this like disgusting like zombie thing with like nails all over it. And like all of the narration is so unhinged, you know? It's like, this is what you get for betraying me. It's like, this is your fault, you know?
Think we're going to have that art on Relay coming up, too.
Yep.
Relay is awesome.
Relay is awesome.
Let's wrap it up.
All right. You've been listening to the Aftershock Central podcast with Travis, Ronnie, and me. What my name is doesn't matter. What matters is that you can find us all on Twitter, at Rumbar316, at The Great Magnet, at Geekvine, at Aftershock Pod. There's some kind of email, but I never remember it. All that matters is subscribe to the podcast, let your friends know about it, and leave an iTunes review if you want. Next week, we'll be talking about Relay Number 0. Wait, are we? Because that comes out at the end of the week.
Sure.
We'll see. Next week, we'll be talking about something. And we might have a guest join. Who knows? It's very possible.
That is possible.
Well, who that guest is doesn't matter, but he's pretty awesome. I mean, should we say who the guest is?
No, let's leave him waiting.
All right. We're going to leave you waiting on a guest. I think that's it. We're going to wrap it up. Thanks for listening. Go shock the world.